Okay, the Q&A.
How sure is that he's doing?
I'm making one. I'm planning.
You're making lists and planning?
Well, one of the things that, mine usually comes and goes. But I've just finished a book by Bhante Pinnaratna about mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very helpful because I'm really starting to understand how little I am present in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the book is written is that he's very clear to he just like diagnoses what mindlessness is in a very mm-hmm. specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I follow through my day the past few weeks, I've been noticing and catching myself dozens and dozens and dozens of times during the course of the day when I am not in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm not either with my feelings, I'm not with the person that I'm with, I'm not with my meal, I'm not with the turkeys, or I'm not with the dishes, that I'm either in the past, or I'm planning, anticipating, figuring out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sometimes wonder why I, can't remember things, and why I think that my life has sort of gotten a little boring. Because I'm not here. But watching myself and become aware of the level of it, I'm very relieved and very excited to know that it's not getting you really bummed out. It's got my curiosity.
Yeah.
It's very subtle at times. Mindlessness,
mm-hmm.
thoughtlessness is very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It's so conditioned, that you don't even realize that you're not here until you realize you're not here. You can see the symptoms.
Yeah.
So when I go into the meditation hall, I've been doing breathing meditation, I've been doing the Lam Rim mantra, but it's to see me having to pull myself back over and over and
mm-hmm.
over over the course of an hour and a quarter is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm off and running
mm-hmm.
every 7-8 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's been very helpful.
Yeah, very helpful. Very good.
Inspired to just start committing to paying attention more to my life.
Yep.
Because the question that you asked last week is, what is the essence? What makes meaning in your life? I don't want to know the answer to that question because I'm not here to really experience it the way that I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because here I'm in this incredible environment, and some days I'm just like catatonic. I just don't want my life to go like this. Be here. Fully focusing here.
Good. Good. Yeah. And how? When we go in the past and the future, not only are we missing out on the present, but our minds are so tormented and confused because of what we're thinking about.
And the thing that he said that was one of the most powerful things that he said, that you go into your practice and you're there with your practice, don't worry about planning in that moment is not going to make the situation any better by increasing your clarity and your wisdom, your mindfulness gives you the tools that whatever's going to happen outside of that space, you're going to be able to deal with it with a lot better tools.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like sitting there ruminating about what's going to happen tomorrow or how I'm doing or what happened yesterday. It doesn't give me any more wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
It just rehashes stuff that half of it hasn't even happened. The other half, has and is over.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, cultivate the clarity, cultivate the wisdom and the open-mindedness that will give you the tools to be able to handle any situation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste your time there. It's been really cool.
Good. Very good. Anybody else? Yeah?
As I was saying, I was working with Lust just earlier this week for a couple of days, I think, maybe just 2 days. It actually was quite productive, and I found my antidote, I guess I would say, for Lust wasn't exactly what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Like they usually say, for antidotes for things you contemplate this or that or whatever, so you contemplate the unsatisfactoriness of the other person. But I realized that that wasn't really for me the actual antidote to the situation. The real thing was just turning my mind towards the mind that already knows the dissatisfaction, that already knows the experience of not getting quite enough. And then all I really need to do is to look in the right direction, and just the act of doing that, because I have enough experience with the unsatisfactoriness of lust and sexual pleasure and all of that, love and everything in that realm, is like it very quickly dissipates anything there. And there's, I think, the word that very best describes it is disillusion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were saying you can have a kind of low mind and have it be virtuous, and that's like, that was what kind of earlier on, now it's starting to be joyful to be able to see the disillusion.
Mm-hmm.
But at first,
mm-hmm.
it was like, you know, wow, this is really something that I found pleasure in, and there is no satisfaction at all. Not even for a minute, not even just the briefest, not during it, not before it, not after it. There wasn't a second of satisfaction. There's a little bit of pleasure, but not anything that was satiating. And so that was just something I worked with, and actually it kind of like all just came together at once. And I wasn't really intending to work on it, actually. It just, I realized that I was getting distracted in my meditation, and I thought, oh, well, maybe there's something to work on. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of trying to happen. But the thing that's being a problem now is that I'm getting a lot of sloth, or I don't know exactly, the definitions are so tough. So just in the meditation of getting sleepy in the meditation,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily falling asleep, but getting to where you can't hold an object anymore, and all you can do is try your best to stay
mm-hmm.
alive and aware and awake and there, and then the object is almost totally gone.
Is it gone because you're falling asleep, or is it gone because your mind is low energy, or is it gone because your mind's somewhere else?
It's not distraction. It's definitely not. It's not like going out to other objects.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually. It's. I think the definition of lethargy in calming the mind seems to suit it well. It was a heaviness of mind that was unserviceable.
Yeah.
It's completely unserviceable. That like when it's there. There is nothing, like, no matter how much effort I put in,
mm-hmm.
there is nothing that will change it, at least mm-hmm. when, short of getting up and doing jumping jacks in the meditation hall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. that doesn't really work that well. Completely unserviceable uh-huh. in every way. And even when it just starts, I can just feel it just barely. It's like I already know. Like now, it's like, what can I do to keep it from coming?
It's yeah.
already here, but
yes.
not quite. I mean, it's so interesting. Last night, I did a session late evening, and I was like, oh, I don't need the extra light on. And the second I turned them off, I didn't notice it till later, but the second I turned it off, the change in my mind was like, now I can relax. I don't actually have to kind of really put effort in here. And it was like, immediately that sense was there of like, just the slightest degree of lethargy, and then so quickly it was just like
give it a spotlight.
So I've been trying to figure out kind of where this stems from, what is the underlying cause of this.
Yeah.
And I know part of it is because I'm doing a lot more practice than I'm used to doing,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not physically exhausted. It's definitely
mm-hmm.
a mental thing, but then again, also you have mental kind of timers and things, so
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit disheveled, I guess, but obviously it's all mental. And I did a lot of meditation on it today. Haven't been able to come up with
mm-hmm.
any sort of suitable understanding to where I could try to find an antidote, sort of in the same way that I did for lust,
mm-hmm.
kind of finding the way to turn the mind, the way in which you
yeah.
actually operate.
Yeah. Well, this kind of heaviness is a way of exiting from the situation. So maybe explore how that's been a pattern.
That was the one. Actually, I found that the lethargy is very much akin to my attachment to sleep. And not necessarily that I always need lots of sleep, but that I like my sleep and that getting into bed is quite comfortable and it's all just very, it's refuge. It's very much a refuge. And I found that that was just the attachment to intoxicants just turned to that. It just struck me. It was just like, maybe this has something to do with it. And I was like, definitely.
Yep.
And so I started going back through sort of my history, and I was dumbfounded by the amount of drugs I've done. In 15 minutes, I think I named something like 60 different kinds of drugs that I've done. And I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know that I've done this many drugs. And then I started thinking, sort of using the lust minds, like, and there's still something in my mind, somewhere in there, that thinks that maybe I can find it in drugs. It's still, and not necessarily drugs, but intoxicants in general, some sort of something that I can get from the outside, but not lust so much, more like, sort of just intoxicants. But maybe TV could be the sort of thing, or, you know, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, I spent the last 4 sessions or something just analyzing that, going over and around and circling and trying to figure it out. And I've been unable to fully apply that back to the lethargy in such a way that I can turn the mind. I'm wondering whether it does seem to be, it's an unserviceability of mine that really feels like that. So is it something that I have to do ahead of time? Is it a certain sort of, you set the motivation prior to so that your mind doesn't turn that way? Or is there actually a way to
yank it back? Yeah, once you're in it, you know, if the mind's really heavy, they usually say end the session and stand up and go and get some fresh air. Okay, that would probably disturb everybody in the hall if you did that. So I think prior to the session, one thing is if you're too warm and the room's too warm, or that you have too many clothes on, that's a real big one for making the mind heavy. Yeah, so you have the blanket that's in your lap, the whatever around here. You know. Yeah. Okay.
The coldest part of the room too. It's farthest from the heater, so unless you put it outside.
Okay. Okay. Then make sure you go before you go in the hall, get some exercise. Do what I was saying yesterday.
Every time before I go in the hall.
Oh, you do.
Half an hour.
Okay.
Before every single.
Okay. Try some of the running in place and the and then check your posture when you're meditating, because when you're walking, you know, because that poor posture really affects the circulations of the wind.
I know that has some small thing to do with it, because I've been at a lot of back pain, so I've been really just trying anything I can to even stay sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that is part of it.
Yeah. But try sitting with a small cushion under your rear and having your rear be higher. That can help straighten the back. Yeah.
So anything that I can do to work with mind, not just my body, before I come to sleep?
Yeah, of course, setting your intention. Yeah. Maybe do a little bit of reflection about this leprosy example, and make it really graphic. Yeah, because sometimes when we imagine something really like that graphically, the mind is, it has some more energy like that. But continue really to investigate this whole habit. in life? You know, when do you exit? And how do you exit?
I hope I didn't over-explain this time. Last time I seemed to have under-explained.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I got adequate information.
No, I think you do. Does anybody else have ideas? How do you work with this kind of lethargy and drowsiness?
I open my eyes real wide and I think of death.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think of, people that have died, or just to get a clear feeling about this grief here.
Mm-hmm.
Waste your time.
Yeah.
Gently, not in a negative.
In an encouraging way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But also opening your eyes. Good. You're good. And imagining when you're breathing, inhaling light and exhaling dark smoke.
Bhante also recommends, I play with that a little bit this week, is that actually holding your breath. And you suffer, for me, it's always somewhat similar to Venerable John Pell's lethargy of sleeping. He says it's actually taking a big, deep breath and hold it. Because it actually, when you're warming up the inside of the body, he said it seems to wake him up. So I tried it a few times, usually in the mornings when I have it the worst, and it seems to help. I do it about 6 or 7 times, and it gets the heart pumping.
Yeah.
The oxygen gets cranking a little bit more to the body.
It's
just
true.
It's like getting up and doing jumping jacks without actually
disturbing
your heart.
Yeah.
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 Also, I had breath mentions on, and I kind of discovered that the thing that you need to curb a little bit. And first, I understood that in this way, but then I find that it's more in this way. And then I get to a point where kind of I'm aware, but I couldn't think. Like, I couldn't. And I don't know if that's right.
The old sort of way?
No, it's like I'll be awake and mindful, to say, aware, right? But I wouldn't be able to do an analytical, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what's your object to meditation at that time?
It's like whatever, good. First, like I try to do my posture, right, and calm down.
Uh-huh.
So then, in that point, I wouldn't be able to focus on a certain topic.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, well, there are times when you get to know your mind that is kind of like, I've had enough thinking, I need, you know, more placement meditation right now, instead of so much conceptualization. So then you do, you know, you tend towards, you know, something that's going to give you a brighter, more alert, concentrated mind, but without necessarily thinking about something. But that's why I asked you what your object of meditation was.
Well, since I've been reading stuff from the Shaktivedi, and it was something like, neither thinking nor not thinking, so not pushing thoughts away and not deliberately thinking, so just trying to calm down and
Yeah, I can't give you any help with their kind of meditation because it's not something that I've trained you. And you're not going to get anywhere if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if every time you read something, you change the kind of meditation you're doing.
Huh? She reads something different every night.
Yeah. So, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. You have to stick with something and you know, go deeper in it. Yeah. But, you know, you can do something to calm your mind down, cause especially if you're going in and you've been thinking about, you know, lettuce and whatever. Then you can sit, you know, get your mind calm. But then know what you're going to meditate on. Because if you don't have any idea what kind of meditation you're going to do, then you're going to sit there. you know, in either dullness or distraction.
I was thinking though, because I said this before, thinking of the posture, and I was thinking that there are, postures in which, and there is a posture in which I can listen, there is another posture in which I can think, like I'm more on the interior, so.
Mm-hmm. You mean you've noticed how you hold your body?
Yes, depends on what I'm able to do.
Okay, so what's your thinking posture?
When I'm more like this. And when I'm alert and not thinking that much, it's more, together.
Yeah.
Like curving here.
Yeah, you don't want to force any curve in your back, not at all. They say to imagine that your vertebrae are like coins stacked or like beads stacked with a string, and you're pulling up this way.
Ever since I did Tai Chi and so on, I've heard so many ways of explaining how to keep your spine or whatever, that the only thing is try it experientially, because I just tried to arrive at a place where I wouldn't feel bad pain in my back, especially in the middle.
Yeah, so. Maybe don't have that goal. Yeah, because when are you going to ever find the most comfortable position where you're not going to have any pain?
That becomes the object of meditation.
But I think that it's like, if you sit totally wrong, then it's obviously that no matter how much time you spend in there, you feel pain, because it's plain not healthy. So I think it's a good.
Yeah, you try and sit in a healthy way and have your spine straight, you know, and not sit flat, not have your legs. But if your whole object is to be comfortable, you're never going to get there. You know, you have to learn to deal with some physical discomfort when you meditate. Because we have bodies. If you don't meditate, is your body ever completely comfortable? It is better, but you know, if you do Tai Chi and you do yoga and you do those kinds of things to eliminate pain, then you're doing the best you can. But if you're looking for a perfect position, it's really hard to come by. Because whenever, you know, you'll find something and you'll be comfortable for a couple minutes, and then the nature of the body is going to be uncomfortable again.
I'm sitting next to me and I'm all about it. I move out every 3 seconds. Like, okay.
Actually, I wanted to comment to you. When you're listening to teachings, you should not be sitting with your knee and your thing slouched over like this, listening to teachings.
What's
that? Yeah, you should be sitting up straight and listening properly.
Okay. I apologize. You told me that before. Didn't even notice.
Yeah. I didn't, not tonight, but you know, just other times. Yeah. I've been meaning to remind you of that for some time. So. Not tonight. How's everybody else doing? Huh? Yeah. How are you doing coming out of retreat?
Yeah, I miss it being in the hall just kind of just because it's different. But I've been quite joyful in doing offering service. So it's, it feels, I think more than anything, just a sense of gratitude for the extended period.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of longing for that, just what, you know, being aware of the way the mind, in which the mind, my mind can slow down, or that I can do things differently. It's just kind of acclimating a little bit. It's been good. It's just different.
Question sort of along the line of Venerable Scrub's, actually, from the teaching last week, I was really struck again with how, even though I can say out loud that a result is just a result, it's not a punishment or a reward, when we're looking at karma, and my deepest inner feeling is the punishment trip. And I have really been watching it, actually this whole retreat, but in the last week especially, how much I want to go there and punish myself. In a way, it's almost a relief. If I feel like there's a certain, anger comes up and it's expressed, there's enough shame in there in some ways that it's a relief to actually see some sort of punishment, to relieve the burden of having had the feeling come up.
What feeling come up?
To have the anger come up at all. You know, like, oh, it's such a terrible, terrible thing that you had that moment of anger. Worse if you expressed it. But, that there's, and it's not gross and dramatic. This is not a big whip.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very subtle judgment that's, you shouldn't have, you shouldn't have that, you shouldn't even have that. And then there is a thing like, oh, the punishment is almost a relief because the pain of having done something terrible, like have a moment of anger, is so great. It's almost like the pain would be, well, like the fire.
Yeah.
Cauterizing the wound, So, it's just...
It's kind of like you're wanting punishment.
Yeah.
Because it satisfies this thing of, well, I was bad, and so I deserve this.
Yeah, and if I had that, then I can let it go. So, how twisted that is.
Yeah.
So,
it reminds me of the people who self-cut.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think it is that. It is exactly that, only it's not acted out. But, the thing that drives me crazy, it's not like I haven't done a zillion years of therapy on this, so that didn't work. I mean, but, so what I'm looking for is what kind of antidote, aside from... Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm quite clear about it. I can see it. I'm not horrified about it. I'm not even embarrassed about it anymore.
What about a little bit of purification?
Well, I do
instead
that.
Instead of punishment.
Well, I do that. But even, I mean, this is something I discovered at the Vajrasattva retreat recently, is that my purification always has that, used to always have that tooth in it.
Of punishment.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, so it's light and nectar, which I really love envisioning light and nectar, but it's because it's something bad. Right? So anyway, I'm working on that aspect, but just this notion of punishment and reward seems so deep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I project it too. I mean, I see all this interconnection stuff. But I don't quite know how to antidote it, besides just looking at it and pulling it apart.
Yeah, I mean, maybe just... watch when your mind's going punishment and reward, and say, is that a punishment, is that a reward? Just the mere fact of questioning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm defining it as punishment and reward. Is that what's going on? No. And 5 minutes later, is this what's going on? No.
Oh, so I can do the designated object and basis of designation of that too.
That little exercise. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be good. Okay. Kind of similar. This week, the day that I was in hall, I actually felt quite positive about what I was working with, although parts of it were getting me into trouble. But one thing I realized is it was starting to feel like, not so great about food purification. And so I was looking at that, and somewhere in there I realized that there's sometimes a part of it, I don't mean always, because I actually really think it's very positive, but there's a part of it where I realized that the remedial action feels like penance.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking at that word as penance, is like punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
And this kind of ties in with the questions I was asking. And I think it's because I find it difficult to use the antidotes in some ways. And so what I did that was actually quite useful was I was looking at this teaching that you gave on the heaviness of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a lot of time, like 20 or 30 minutes, doing reading meditation, setting my motivation, and going through these different things and trying to generate what is regret and not guilt, which I don't discern well, but really focusing more on the determination side, and that was, and telling myself I'm doing a constructive action here. Because this is the thing that I have a hard time with. I just feel like sometimes the purification is just like a whip, you know, and I don't feel like, you know, it's this whole Catholic thing.
You Catholic.
I can't see it. It's so hard to see it. And so this is why I'm kind of like wanting to kind of shift this thing of like, I mean, then I realized, wow, purification is a constructive action. Well, I never really had those two things together in my mind before.
Yeah.
You know, there's a part of it that is, this is the problem, is I can't separate out those things of like, for me, you know, having these emotions is bad. It's really hard to separate out. The experience is not, you're not okay. Mm-hmm. You're really not okay to have these things. And I can't separate them out. And so then when I do the purification, it's just like, sometimes it's just like, you know, it's just like reinforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to rephrase the whole thing with the things that I know that are positive, you know, and then it's like, oh, wow, that's what that thing really is supposed to be. This purification is a constructive action. It was like a light bulb. You know, it feels like the real action isn't penance.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, I don't know, it's, I can't separate these things, but I kind of think that what I was doing, the parts of it I want to keep, because I think they were really good, I really could see that doing something constructive and just even like formulating things in my mind that way, like when these thoughts come up that I think are really kind of judgmental about myself or others, just taking that moment, and it's easier, you know, in retreat when things aren't busy and your mind has the space, just completely rephrasing them. This is the way I want this to be said to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And just every time. You know,
can you make an example?
Like this guy is such a jerk because he's doing this. Or I'm so, you know, crazy because he's doing this, and that. It's just like, no. This person is, you know, doing wonderful things, and I'm looking at these things and working with these things and just always turning it into a positive, because, you know, so I think that was, part of that was good, and then that I feel comfortable with. The part that kind of got me into trouble, I don't know, this didn't work so well, was last week when you were teaching, I had a really strong experience, and I think it's because of just kind of seeing everything in samsara as suffering. And I had what came to my mind really strongly was, there's nothing left for me in samsara. And then when I worked with that during the week, because there was something in that that had value, because then I could, when I worked with it one way, then I could say, and then so just don't cling after these things. None of these things will give you satisfaction. The problem was that sometimes when I went there, I was so far away from having an open heart and a clear mind. There was something in it that went really like what you were talking about tonight. So I'm not going to trust, so I'm not going to care. You know, it went to like, I'm exiting other people. You know, and I could really feel that. Like, there was a part of this that was really useful, and then there was a part where this is a little dangerous way for me to think, because I'm going to exit left from people.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the purpose
exactly
at all.
Right. Yeah. So I just kind of was seeing that, and I would just say, this isn't the way to use this idea.
Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't use this idea.
Yeah. Well, you use it, but you notice, because, you know, we happen to be real extremists.
Mm-hmm.
show, you know, you when you go to one extreme, it doesn't mean give up. It means bring yourself back to balance.
Yeah, I know, that's yeah. what's so hard, because when you want to pull away from something, instead of just pulling away into here, you just go,
right.
That's what I notice so much in my mind. Like,
yeah.
I'm here, I don't want to be this, but I pull away and I'm like, boom, way off over there. And
yeah.
Not good over there.
No, it's not good over there. And then you'll find, actually, if you look closely, you'll find that both extremes are based on similar premises. And the middle way you're looking for is not halfway between them. It's someplace outside of both of them. Because they're both based on some kind of, usually, you know, on a very similar premise. But you're just buying into different sides of it at different times. Yeah.
And this is what it feels like. It feels like this is not the way I want to be, and this is not the way I want to be.
Mm-hmm. And so you go, oh, okay, I want to be that. Don't want to be that. Then there's got to be other alternatives. Okay? There's got to be more. I shouldn't just think there's only these two alternatives. There's other alternatives. So what could they be? And this is where I find it's very helpful to think, okay, if Chenrezig were sitting here, if Manjushri were sitting here, how would Manjushri look at this situation?
Yeah, and I actually do find that helpful. I mean, I've heard you say that so many times that it comes to my mind and I'm like, wow, what would they think?
Yeah.
It makes my mind, you know, just any way I can turn it, like what John Poe was saying, this little part that just turns and looks differently, it almost takes only that much to have all these other ways of seeing things.
I've been working this week with the judgment line, similar kind of, when it arises, what you said you were doing would be staying kind of in the story, and the guy isn't a jerk or that. Yeah, what I've been trying to do is step out of it totally, and kind of, I tell myself, thinking this way isn't bringing me any peace or any clarity, any peace, any happiness. It isn't working. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of try to step out of it totally. And by doing that, the other thing that I'm starting to recognize is when I'm in that mind, there's adrenaline going on in my body. And so that's kind of the fuel. Because that's an old pattern. You know, I came from a lot of adrenaline, a lot of chaos. So that's a very familiar place. And so that's been very helpful. So then I started working on calming that down some. And then I would start going to the lethargy. Chasing it around.
Yeah.
So I think the thing I found the most helpful was that the number of times that equanimity meditation, and it really is so clear to me that I'm the one who's making the complete discrimination of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's just so clear. That's what I think I should say. I'm just labeling it, the whole thing, all based on my opinions, my preferences, my wants, my needs, my reactions, my feelings. I'm just creating the whole scenario.
And it's all to nourish the sense of I. You know, the whole thing is to nourish I and mine. Because even when we have a judgmental mind, we're nourishing the sense of I, aren't we? We're miserable as all get out, but the sense of I is thriving.
Yeah. It's like what you said today about mind. you know, because I was feeling sick today, and oftentimes when I'm here and I feel sick, I don't feel like this is home. And I was feeling like this is not my home. And when you were talking about mine, I just thought, okay, it's not my home, this is the place that I live. And I felt fine about it. It wasn't my home anymore. It was just, oh, this is the place I live, and okay, fine.
Our mind's so strange, isn't it?
One thing I found just extremely helpful all week was going to that idea of the body being neutral and doing some meditations about, like, here's a pile of rocks. And look at a pile of rocks, like those big rocks that
are
on the surface. I go, well, what do I think about that rock? You know? I go, it's just a rock, you know? It's like sitting there, it's a rock. I can't apply that to my body. And that application felt so new that I actually didn't, when I realized I don't just have the Catholic piece, which is fading with the thank goodness of the bad people. But then the whole reaction to that as a young person, no, the body's wonderful and sensations and they lied, and so, you know, the total reaction.
Yeah.
You know, the whole give me a head with hair thing. And just seeing the two, again, two extremes, you know, and neither, both of them being just fancy land nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and then just coming to this really quite peaceful place of, what do I think when I pass that rock and I look at it? It's like a rock. Okay, so you have a body. It's just like that rock. It's just, there it is. It's just, that's how it is. That's what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, I just can't tell you how that one thought. There's something really shifting. One thing that's happening is just kind of a happier place out of it. I don't quite
know
the steps. I don't even care if I get them all, but there's just some sort of a more happy sensation with not those two. You know, because they're both so false.
Right, right. And you can see how they're both based on incredible amounts of attachment to the body.
Yeah.
That's why I was saying that two extremes often have something very much in common.
Yeah. It's so awful. It's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And they both just cause so much stress.
Mm-hmm.
So my body's feeling quite a bit for
that. Isn't it? It's just a body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Good enough.
Yeah, I mean, it could be really helpful to sit there and, like, you know, just sit there and look at the rock for a while. And what's the difference between the earth element in my body and the earth element in that rock?
Yeah, well, I just went back and walking by it.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of been looking at it and been a little cold. Yeah. I'm looking at it and going, what do I do?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just fine. It serves its purpose. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it serves its purpose.
Thank Buddha. Buddha thought of that, not me. Okay. Should we dedicate?